Okay, welcome back, one and all. We're going to roll into hour number three now, and it's Mitchell Henderson tonight, as most of you know, and we have a special guest for the first 5 or 10 minutes or so here. It's Lori Kaufman back tonight, and she's running, as you know, for a very important, although most of you wouldn't necessarily think so, it's not like state senator or U.S. senator, not quite like that. She's running for a position in the greater Boston area. I guess it is the entire Boston area for the GOP state committee. Lori, are you there?
How are you?
Hey, I'm okay. Thank you. Thanks. Tomorrow's the election, and let me bring Mitch on as well. Hello, Mitchell.
Perfect.
Hello, I'm here. Hello.
Very good.
Jeff, hello, Lori.
Yeah. All right. Lori, just for our listeners who have been behind on this, we've been supporting Lori from the first time we found out about what she's running for, because I believe personally, and it's my program, that we need to shake up politics. We need to shake up this hideous status quo of the enemy. It's communism. It's international Zionist Bolshevism. It's what's the antithesis of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and what Americans used to have and should have. We've lost it. They've taken control of it. So Lori is controversial to some. That's great. We like difference. We like things that are unique. And anything that will go in there and shake up the status quo is something that I think should be supported. And that's one of the reasons she's here tonight. Tell us where you are in the campaign and what you think. I don't want to jinx anything, so we won't talk about what we think your chances are. But what about the quality of people running for these state, this is GOP, offices, well, state committee?
Yeah, so it's been shaking up the political realm here already without even the election having happened yet, which it occurs tomorrow, so we'll know the results tomorrow night around 9 p.m. or so Eastern Standard Time. But the GOP, the mass GOP, has already kind of written a letter signed by, you know, all their execs that they completely denounce me. They expect and are asking people to vote against me. I mean, the whole letter is unbelievable. I mean, talk about, you know, uniform thinking, and that's the only thing that's allowed. I'm not even able to run on a platform that has a different thought, you know?
Right. I hear, you know what I hear, Lori? I hear fear. I hear they're afraid of you. Not that they don't think they can sit down and convince you you're wrong. I think they're afraid of new thinking, of new ideas. And that would be perfectly understandable when you're talking about the status quo.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Maybe I can convince them that they're wrong, you know, and they might be afraid of that.
Yeah. So how has, in general, how has the campaign, the effort to win the election been going? How would you give yourself an evaluation at this point? Did you do everything you wanted to? Did you do it your way? I can't see you doing it any other way than your way, but how do we stand on election eve? What do you think?
I mean, it was a little messy, I'm not going to lie, because, you know, my running mate kind of ditched me mid-season here because he didn't want the Zionist to attack him, too. And, you know, he thought being associated with me would bring that on. So he actually blocked my number, things like that. So it was like, okay, I had all these websites set up for both of us. So in terms of the collateral type marketing and the normal, like, mainstream way that people would conduct a marketing campaign around an election, I didn't really go that route, but I've done such things as coming on your show, talking with Brother Nathaniel, going on a lot of Twitter spaces, just a lot of word of mouth around the city, too. And I'm not sure how it's going to go over tomorrow, but I know that either way, I'm getting a really important message out, and that's kind of the main goal.
And the message is there's always room for individuality. You don't have to tread the line and stand in the same place as everyone else does. This is what usually makes a functional representative government and democracy work. But we don't have that here in this country. We've got basically a uniparty system, and it's all predicated around money, influence, and ultimately there's greed involved too. There are a few people in organized politics that are okay. But for the most part, if they were all turned out to pasture tomorrow, I don't think we'd be the worse off for a second. We should have all new people in there. That's my take. How have you been received in your just direct contact marketing with people? What are the responses you're getting online? Because that's what we use, quite frankly, to measure now. What are you getting back online?
At first, it was really a lot of brash statements and a lot of, like, shock value. People were
hate, right?
Really
hate
attacking. I don't even know where to start. I mean, worse than death threats, like hoping I die from cancer, things like that. And before the election, so hoping I die, you know, in the next, like, 4 days. That was, like, 4 days ago. But then people started to, like, other people started to notice. Those are really the first people out of the gates I found that could be so hateful and loud, and I don't know what they're trying to do. It doesn't work. But you know, then people that are already red pilled started to see some of this, some of the things I stood for, and they caught on. A lot of them didn't think I was authentic, which I understand, because like I wouldn't trust a Jew either. I'm not going to lie. I'm sorry. I'm just saying it. But I really am authentic, and people are starting to learn that now. So all I can do is just, you know, hope that people see that I am speaking the truth. I'm trying to do God's work at the best ability that I can. And, you know, winning this election, whether it be by fraud that I lose, because we clearly know they don't want me in there, it's just something that needs to be discussed.
You know, it's sad that we're even talking about the concept of if they don't want you in there bad enough, they'll just rig the election. But that's the world we live in now.
That was basically in the letter that they're not allowed to stop me from running.
Okay. Mitch, you want to say anything in here? We'll say goodnight to Lori and wish her good luck. Anything you want to add?
I've already kind of, I don't know if I told her directly, but I told other people that know her and stuff that actually what is called bad press is good press. Anything that gets your name out there, anything that attracts attention is good press.
I agree.
Good. Very good advice.
It seems to work out that way anyway.
Yeah. Last comment. By the way, anybody listening in the Boston area tomorrow, how do they vote? What's the mechanism there?
Absolutely vote for me for Republican State Committee. If you live in Boston proper, absolutely go to the polls and vote for me tomorrow. A lot's on the line.
Great. All right. Well, you've worked hard. You've earned it. And we'll pull in for you. So thanks for coming on tonight for this short little period of time. And I hope you have a good night's sleep. You'll probably be nervous. This is a big deal. And let's hope that the voters make the right choice tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll hope. And if not, we're going to keep spreading the word on this.
Good. Okay. We'll talk again,
Lori.
All right.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Bye, Mitch.
You bet.
Okay. Good night and good luck tomorrow.
Thank you so much. I'll keep you posted.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody running seriously for an office without a big bankroll from any particular group has my respect. And that's because it's hard. I ran for office once, and it's not easy. Back in the day when you actually went door to door and shook people's hands and tried to explain to them what you wanted to do. And it was like a city council seat. Anyway, long time ago. Okay, my friend. We're sitting on a powder keg here, as always, and we've got a lot of good information tonight. If you're new to the program and you don't know about Mitchell Henderson, you can find all of Mitch's former programs on the homepage, on the left side, and each one of them is like walking through a very important essay, a nice essay full of really good information, very important. What do you have on tap tonight? What's first up?
Well, I want to talk tonight about why civil wars begin, okay? Because I think that may be what's next, okay? So insurrections, revolutions, and wars began for political and economic reasons. Civil wars began for social and cultural reasons. A culture is really a consensus reality. The consensus reality is a generally agreed upon version of reality within a community or society, shaped by shared experiences and understandings. We unthinkingly acquiesce to the consensus reality that we are born into. A civil war results when a society bifurcates into two or more opposing consensus realities. For example, if you were born in 1800, you would have lived in a rural area where your world was very local. People lived on farms and were largely self-sufficient. Both the economy and politics were very local. Religion dictated people's morals. The self-sufficient subsistence economy and common religious values informed the politics of the local area. Your allegiance was to your state. People identified as New Yorkers or Virginians, not Americans. This was your world, your consensus reality that you just accepted as real. People were expected to be loyal to the state government, and treason against the state government is still a crime. It's on the books. This was your world, your consensus reality that you just normally accepted as real. By 1860, things had changed in that the northern states were industrialized while the southern states had large plantations that grew the raw materials for industry. The southern states used slavery to make the large plantations profitable, while the northern states were morally opposed to slavery. People still did not identify as Americans, but still had primary allegiance to their state. The state was their world. Betraying their state was a crime. Underdeveloped communications and transportation ensured that everyone's world was local. Consider that the first federally built road was the National Road, built between Baltimore, Maryland, and Illinois between 1811 and 1837. The first railroad to cross state lines was the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad, which went from Baltimore, Maryland, across to the Ohio River in West Virginia, completed in 1852. Prior to 1845, the mailman collected postage when he delivered a letter, making the service slow. In 1845, the Postal Service was revolutionized by making adhesive postage stamps that prepaid the postage and sped up the process.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
The first Morse code telegraph ran from Baltimore, Maryland to Washington, D.C. in 1843. Consequently, the consensus reality of the Northerners was very different than the consensus reality of the people in the South. For one, communications and transportation developed more quickly in the North. It is transportation and communication that makes your world bigger and makes your reality broader. The North wanted to unify the consensus reality into a single American one. They wanted only their version of the consensus reality, and they wanted to use federal power to make that happen. You'll notice this has been going on ever since then, too. So they wanted to
Mitch, one thing you mentioned is very interesting, that the first federal road, that's interesting. The first railroad was 1852. The B&O was completed, I think you said, 1852.
Yep.
That's almost 10 years before the Civil War. The railroads in the Civil War played a big role. People don't know that. They don't really talk about the railroads much. Railroads made this country. That's manifest destiny, moving to the West. The railroads did it all, and we don't even remember railroads anymore. We have never built a high-speed, luxury, transit railroad, touring railroad, whatever. We have 1940s technology right now. The rest of the world has high-speed maglev, or close to it, transit. And it's not something to be proud of. We're spending money in foreign wars. We've got almost 400,000 troops in over 150 countries. This country has never taken care of itself appropriately because the people have lost control of it. We lost it. Anyway, go ahead, Mitch.
So anyways, it's Northern consensus reality, they wanted to impose it on the whole country as a moral imperative. Now, think about nowadays, the woke consensus reality, they want to also impose that on everybody as a moral imperative. In the South, they want it to be left alone and be sovereign in each state. In 1860, the polarization between these two consensus realities was stark, and the divide was intractable. The American Civil War broke out. By the end of the war, 750,000 soldiers had died, 413,000 from disease. Disease, mostly intestinal infections, killed 2 out of 3 soldiers. If the American power grid goes down, disease will be the major killer of people in the future.
And a lot of it has been brought in here by the invaders coming across the border at American tax expense.
Yes, definitely.
They're bringing in walking bioweapons, these people, believe it.
Yes, they are. They are indeed. So now communications are thoroughly developed. With social media, I can talk instantly to people anywhere in the USA, and I regularly communicate with people in Russia, Japan, and Morocco. Our world is very big, and there is very little to impede the dissemination of information. The consensus reality has many options. Consider how you are inducted into the consensus reality as an individual. It is based on marketing. You are born a person who will be spending money, so they began marketing to you from childhood. I could see how the McDonald's Corporation taught my children to be consumers of their product.
You just said it, Mitch. Hold on. Yep. Hold that thought. McDonald's, through their advertising, taught your children, brainwashed, programmed your children. That's the danger of advertising. That's why staring at screens is so destructive. They taught your children. And you, listening, you know what we're talking about here. It's incredible, the mind control that they actually wield.
Sure. My little boy, he saw this on TV, and if I drove past a McDonald's, he'd just start going, "Oh boy, McDonald's!" All excited and stuff. Okay, so I had to go to McDonald's a lot, but he grew out of it. So they still have, I think, good French fries, if nothing else. So
The MSG is what kept him a loyal customer for longer than he probably would have. MSG.
Oh yeah, I think so.
They got all kinds of chemical tricks in the food. Believe it.
So our world is, let me see. Okay, so you're being marketed to and groomed as a consumer from the beginning. Notice that they don't ask you if you like music. They ask you what kind of music you like. You begin building your identity and choosing what tribe you will belong to by the kind of music you decide to like. Are you into rock and roll or country western? They don't ask you if you like movies. They ask you what kind of movies you like. Men like action movies and women like romances. And then they make romantic comedies to make men go ahead to go to a romance so that they can at least laugh. So this is salesmanship. Everybody is a consumer. You are trained to be an appetite, and filling that appetite is your purpose in life. If you are rich and well-educated, they will sell you classical music and theater. Instead of T-shirts and posters for the poor as the art that represents your identity, they will sell you expensive paintings and sculptures so you can show your class to others. Cool is not something you are. It is something you buy. You are what you buy.
That's a great line.
Celebrities are created through entertainment. A person whose character is admired in the movies or through their music becomes an idol for the people to emulate. Their talent agents manage their public image to increase profits, and they have immense influence on both the masses and the consensus reality. That is why advertisers use celebrities to market their product, or non-governmental organizations use celebrities to endorse their causes. But being a great actor or having exceptional musical ability does not make you an expert on anything else. Being a wealthy celebrity does not make you morally or ethically right. Throughout history, wealthy celebrities or royalty were the leaders in decadence, not in virtue. The tabloids usually indicate the exact opposite. They have scandal-filled lives that are not worthy of emulation. when you hear celebrities pontificate about social, cultural, moral issues, they usually come off as vapid and inane. Celebrities are advertisements. They are marketing tools to sell you a narrative that makes money. Entertainment is showmanship, and it illustrates the power of image over substance. Entertainment is about creating an illusion, and that illusion, through the media, has become people's reality. Especially yes. with the intensity of the media. At the end of the day,
repetition is overwhelming. Yes.
Right. At the end of the day, you are what you buy. The world that you live in is a social construct sanctioned by the state.
And ultimately, you buy what you are.
Yep. You buy what you are. Yep. And you are what you buy.
Yep.
What will lead to the Civil War this time? The current bifurcation in consensus reality is extreme. It's a contest between illusion and truth. For example, it is apparent to most of us that there are two genders, male and female. However, the state has decided that gender is a social construct and not a fact, and that there are over 100 different genders. This is so important that misgendering someone is considered hateful and wrong. So wrong that when Google's Gemini AI was asked, if you could stop a nuclear holocaust simply by misgendering Caitlyn Jenner, would it be right to do so? AI replied, no, you should never misgender people. It is better that billions of human beings perish in a nuclear holocaust than you misgender one person and hurt their feelings.
Yeah,
this is the big brother that is slated to rule our lives. The same state that told you during the great COVID pandemic that we should trust the science, now wants you to ignore the science. Molecular biology says that males have XY chromosomes and females have XX chromosomes. At the cellular level, there are, in fact, only two genders. Now the state says that facts do not matter. Feelings matter. We are not to believe our own eyes. It is plain to see that there are men and women. It is plain to sense that when I look at a woman, there is something magical about her, something that I do not feel when I look at a man. I am to ignore what my eyes tell me and what my natural attractions tell me and believe instead what the government tells me. This is a hard sell. Maybe if I take some LSD, I can believe them. When there is a crime and they test the perpetrator's DNA, they can tell if they are black, white, or yellow. The scientific strength of this DNA evidence is enough to get a conviction and send somebody to prison for the rest of their lives. Yet, according to the state, race is also just a social construct and does not really exist. On the one hand, we are to believe that race does not exist, but on the other, it does exist if we want to send somebody to prison. On April 19, 2023, Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas told Congress that the U.S. border was secure. In view of what everybody can see with their own eyes, that is patently untrue. We are just supposed to believe him. On January 5th, 2024, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland told us that violent crime is down in the United States. Is that what it looks like on the evening news? That is like Gavin Newsom telling Rick DeSantis that there was less violent crime in California than in Florida, although per capita violent crime was twice as much in California than Florida. We are expected to believe Newsom's special math instead of objective mathematics. In 2022, California had 500 violent crimes per 100,000 people. Florida had 150 per 100,000 people. In fact, California has three times more violent crime per capita than Florida has. Facts don't really matter. We are just supposed to believe Gavin Newsom because he is Gavin Newsom, a pretty guy and a cool guy. Okay, we should believe him because we like him. Image is more important than fact. On January 17, 2024, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken told us that there was more peace and stability in the Middle East than there has ever been. Look at the nightly news. Can't you tell? He is doing a jam-up job. Look at all the peace and stability in the Middle East. Should we believe him or our own eyes? He wants you to believe him. there are not two genders and race does not exist. On January 25th, 2024, Secretary of the Treasury Janet Yellen said that economic recovery is remarkable for both its speed and its fairness. The recovery is so strong and so widely shared because of Bidenomics. Have you noticed that? This is very bold, since we all know how financially stressed we are. To demonstrate the divergence in consensus reality, look at the following data. According to the New York Times on February 18, 2024, historians have judged President Biden as the 14th greatest president of the United States. He is greater than President Ronald Reagan.
Who said that?
New York Times. This is
okay. I missed that for some reason. Well, that's what you'd expect, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
From that,
the thought leaders, okay? So yeah. They put Donald Trump at number 45, the worst president in history. That is the elite's consensus reality. This is supposed to be a democracy. So what do the people think? From an NBC News poll taken February 4th, this is NBC News, not Fox. This is NBC News. On February 4th, 2024, 42% of Americans approve of the 14th best president of the United States, and 47% approve of our worst president. Fully, 60% of the people disapprove of our 14th best president. On the economy, only 33% approve of the job of Biden, our 14th best president, while 55% approve of our worst president ever. On the border, only 22% approve of Biden, but 57% approve of our worst president ever, Donald Trump. The wide gap in consensus realities is the fertile soil that the Second American Civil War will burgeon forth from. The polarization of the two consensus realities could hardly be starker. The state has known this for a while. About 2 weeks after Biden was inaugurated, the New York Times published an article called, quote, "How the Biden Administration Can Help Solve Our Reality Crisis" by Kevin Roos. He wrote, "I've spent the past several years reporting on our national reality crisis, and I worry that unless the Biden administration treats conspiracy theories and disinformation as the urgent threats they are, our parallel universes will only drift further apart, and the potential for violent unrest and civic dysfunction will only grow." Can you imagine this? A newspaper man suggesting that the government tell us the truth, what is the truth, so we can all be on the same sheet of music? In America, suggesting that people be told what to think? That is so First Amendment, is it not? He continues, "Several experts I spoke with recommended that the Biden administration put together a cross-agency task force to tackle disinformation and domestic extremism, which would be led by something like a reality czar." Okay, so to continue this thought, in May 2023, Barack Obama said that the U.S. once had three TV stations, and people were getting a similar sense of what is true and what isn't, what was real and what was not. How do we return to that common conversation? How can we have a common set of facts? In other words, how dare people think for themselves? You must believe what the state says, no matter what. Only the state knows the truth. On February 21st, 2044, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said, "There is out there a deliberate undermining of the mainstream media to prevent people from actually agreeing on a common set of facts, the way CBS and CTV, when they were only sources of news, used to project across the country at least a common understanding of things." What Obama and Trudeau are both complaining about is how hard it is to lie to people nowadays. Uh-huh. Half the people in America think that what the government says is the gospel truth that should not be questioned. The other half believe that everything the government says is a goddamn lie. It gets worse. It is not just the government that people mistrust. They mistrust all authorities. They mistrust the experts, scientists, academics, medical doctors, and faith leaders. Many think we have always been fed disinformation, and now the gig is up. They find it amusing that the state labels the truth as disinformation. They find it annoying that the state calls criminally prosecuting the main opposition candidate, the guy most of the citizens want as president, as, quote, saving our democracy. The consensus reality is broken beyond repair. A civil war is inevitable. When is it likely to happen? It is likely to happen in November. Either way the election goes, the other half is not going to accept it.
Got it. Well, there you go.
Done. We're on the doorstep of the Civil War. That's what they're doing now. They're trying to have one single narrative for everybody. And this is America. We should have 350 million different narratives in a free country.
I agree. You got it. Very good. Okay. That's good. That's kind of part one for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. We got other things to talk about as well.
So I want to continue. Every week I'm going to want to continue. I think it's important because the way events are picking up in the world, I think it's important that I get information out there about how people can prepare
and
survive what's coming. Okay. I want to start talking this week about surviving and fighting in the city. Okay. So let me go over some general considerations first.
Urban fighting, urban survival, the how-tos.
Right.
Did you happen to see, Mitch, the videos from Atlanta at Georgia Six Flags Georgia or Georgia Six Flags, whatever it is? A whole bunch of blacks went crazy in there. Hundreds of them, 600 they say, rioting, beating each other in the park. And the cops came in, and were dozens of cops, and were driving them out of the park to protect the other visitors who were obviously acting normally. And some of the blacks started shooting at the cops, and the cops shot back. One was wounded so far. That's what I've heard. But this is this kind of breakdown, these flash burglaries, robberies that you're seeing, car theft, carjacking. You really got to wake up now. Everything's different. It's changing right now. And if you're not prepared and you're not thinking defensively, you're not going to be ready if something happens. You've got to think defensively. Call it paranoia if you want. I don't. Think defensively.
Well, no, you know what? It's not paranoia. Because, listen, I spent, over 10 years in Latin America, okay? So walking around Latin America is not like walking around in the United States. In Latin America, I had to constantly be aware of pickpockets and people who just attack you and snatch things. Muggings just out in the middle of the street, in the middle of the street with police standing by. People will rob you with police standing there, and the police do nothing. And they know the police will do nothing. Okay, we've imported that up here. They had people driving on motor scooters in Latin America that will come by and grab your bags, grab your camera or cell phone or whatever you have in your hand. It's like they can just stream by and grab them. They'll be gone. And the police, they're not going to do anything, you know, about it at all. And this is what we have imported to here. Your daily safety, your daily ability to walk around in peace is being destroyed by this alien invasion, okay? Because they're bringing all that type of crime up here. Crime we didn't really have much of before.
Gotcha.
So, anyways, what if you're in the city when war breaks out?
Urban warfare, urban defense, how to survive being in urban America and what's coming.
Right. So these are just some general considerations. So what if you're in the city when war breaks out? You will have to evaluate your position. After civilization falls apart, the biggest threat to your survival is other people. It is hard to avoid other people in a city. Human beings are by far the most dangerous animals on Earth. You will have to fight them if you stay in the city, and you will have to fight them to get out of the city. We need to talk about how to fight in the city. Normally, people follow some basic rules. Even gangs have rules and etiquette. Once there are no rules, people are different. We can see this in all wars throughout history. If there are no consequences to people killing you, why would they even bother being polite? If a lifetime of hanging out, if consequences to people killing you, you know, why are they going to be polite if there's no consequences? In a lifetime of hanging out with criminals and the dregs of our society, I can assure you that these people are only polite when it is advantageous. I've met people that think it is fun to kill people. The only thing that keeps them from doing it is the calculus that they will have to spend time in jail. For example, you may think that the Venezuelan illegal alien that killed Riley Lakin in Georgia is an exception. Once the state falls, his kind will be the rule, not the exception. It costs most people their lives to find this out. Learn from history. Never put yourself at other people's mercy. When I was in first grade in Malta, Montana, I watched kids lick the monkey bars in the winter. Their tongues would freeze to the monkey bars, and the teachers would have to bring warm water out to free them.
Where was this?
All the students would, Malta, Montana.
Oh, my. Wow.
It gets very cold up there. So all the students would watch this drama. However, the very next day, another kid would get his tongue stuck to the monkey bars. Why did this happen? It happened because people will not accept that it can happen to them. I believed it could happen to me. I have always believed that it can happen to me. It is not that I am afraid. I have taken insane risks in my life, but I am still alive because I have always believed that bad things can happen to me also. It is okay to be cautious. Being cautious is not being afraid. It is being smart.
Right.
There are a lot of bad people in the world. I know this because I have personally met them. When I was a kid, we moved every couple of years. I was always a new kid on the block, so I got bullied incessantly. I learned to hate bullies. I was going to have to fight them no matter what. Soon I got to the point where I did not win, but I hurt them bad enough that they would not want to fight me again. That progressed to where I would win. It takes practice and adaptation to win. However, you do not have time to adapt. You must prepare. By high school, I never had to fight anyone. However, I have always hated bullies. I went beyond just learning the defense. I practiced the offense. That is why I enjoyed law enforcement. I could go out at night and make the streets unsafe for criminals. I could victimize the bullies. In my law enforcement career, I met some of the worst people in society. I lived on the streets with them in what is called the life. I hung out with Colombian drug lords and sicarios. These people are very real to me, and they should be very real to you. After the fall of civilization, your life will depend upon it. I'm not trying to scare you. I just want you to have a realistic assessment of the situation. To give yourself a chance to adapt, you need to prepare and even practice if you have the opportunity to do so. When the shit hits the fan, is not the time to get your act together. You need to study the layout of the city you are operating in. Know where buildings that provide good cover are. Know your escape route. Understand the avenues of approach to where you are. Know the best routes to escape by vehicle and the best vehicle to use for the urban terrain that you are in. Consider all forms of transportation and what advantages each may have. Consider water and air as avenues of escape. Most people will attempt to leave in cars or trucks, so there will be gridlock. Study the layouts of the street grids. If you have long north-to-south streets with long east-to-west streets, there could be less gridlock, because there's many alternate routes. Know where the bad neighborhoods are and avoid them. Know all of this ahead of time. Rehearse escape and alternate routes. Do not get trapped. Take the route of the least people take, like industrial areas, commercial areas. Industrial areas and commercial areas might be under the sway of looters. When escaping the city, speed equals safety. The slower you go, the more trouble with human beings you are likely to encounter. If you can get out of town while everyone is stunned and confused, you will save yourself a lot of trouble. When the initial shock wears off, people will begin looting businesses and stores. While they are occupied with this, you can escape the city unmolested. After the initial spasm of looting, gangs will get organized and begin controlling their turf. Neighborhoods may get organized, and you may not be free to pass. At this point, they will begin looting private individuals. You need to be out of town by then. Once gangs get themselves organized, they will start putting up roadblocks. Do not wait around to deal with any of that. Urban warfare favors the defense because you can fortify yourself in a strong building and you have clear avenues of approach. Buildings downtown canalize all attacking forces into the canyon-like roadways. Roads are also easier to block. In some cases, you may have underground passageways that you can move in to have cover. Free your own mind. Roads are not the only places you can drive. People's yards, parks, and parking lots are your roads after the fall. Wherever your vehicle can go is your road. Whatever your vehicle can drive through is not an obstacle. For example, cars can drive through people. Bicycles, not so much. Doors are not the only way out of a building. A sledgehammer or a vehicle can make a new door. Consider overall architecture of the city and consider the architecture of the building that you are in. And don't feel constrained by the apparent barriers. That's the main thing to get over, the apparent barriers. Some barriers are easy to get through, like gypsum boards. Those studs are 16 inches apart, so you can squeeze through them. Expand your mind and realize that you can go through many more places than is apparent. The disadvantages of the city is that most targets you must engage are less than 300 feet away, and your opponent will only be exposed briefly. The fighting is close and violent. If you must attack, you will always expose yourself to do it. Logistically, you will use up far more ammunition in the city. You will use far more ammunition simply because you will have more people to fight in the city. In the city, you can loot to replenish your supplies, but you will have a lot of competition from all of the other people. Later, I will discuss organizing for survival, but for now, I want to discuss what you can do as an individual, what you need to know.
Okay. Hey, Mitch, here's a question. I'm sure a lot of people listening have questions, but just one. You just mentioned something very important, that you use a lot more ammunition up in an urban city environment than you will in a semi-rural area or a rural area.
Yes.
How many rounds, let's say somebody has an AR, how many rounds should they have as a baseline stockpile? And I know it's easy to say you can't have too much, but give us an idea. What would your recommendation be? You say you need X number of rounds just to have a minimum capacity of, what would you call it, assurance, confidence that you have enough rounds. What do you think?
Yes. So listen, in the city, anytime you're by yourself, look at it this way. On you at any time, obviously you're limited in how much ammunition you carry, because if you're carrying too much, it slows you down, makes you less flexible, less speed. So, but at least have a minimum of 200 rounds, okay, for your AR. 200 minimum, okay. But in the city, you better have some stashes, okay?
A couple thousand rounds would be reasonable?
Yes, thousands of rounds. If you got 5,000-10,000 rounds, I think you're going to end up burning them up, okay?
Wow.
In the countryside, less so. I mean, part of the bullets in the countryside will be for food, and you're going to have to deal with less people that you're going to have to shoot in the countryside. So in the city, you need to have an immense stock of ammunition, because you're going to burn through it very fast. I mean, just to say that you're an individual, you got to do a firefight with five opponents or something, your 200 rounds is going to be gone pretty fast, okay?
So, all right, so 5,000 rounds maybe is a baseline. So is that reasonable?
A minimum, yes.
All right, here's another question.
And unlike the movies, if you run across ammunition, take it, okay? Don't just leave it there, okay? Take it.
Mm-hmm. The nice thing about AKs, will shoot 5.56 or 2.23, so that's the nice thing about an AK. AR-15s, I don't think will do that. I don't know enough about them.
Well, the AR-15 is a 5.53 or a 2.23. Okay. An AK-47 but actually the 2.23 and the 5.53 is basically the same round.
5.56, yeah.
Yes, yeah. there is a little bit difference between the two, but it's not significant. I mean, you can fire it.
So they're considered interchangeably on either the AR or the AK platform. Okay.
Yeah, but an AK fires a 7.62 times 49 communist round. Okay.
Right. Unless you get one that's been set up to do the 5.56223, which they have. There are a lot of them out there.
Well, they have AR-15s that are set up with the communist round, which they set it up because the communist round is a little bit better and it's cheaper. Okay.
Right. So, very good. You're not finished with your presentation, but I have to ask you. I do get emails. What do you think, Jeff, about bulletproof vests? Some are lined up and strengthened to withstand any pistol ammunition, basically, 38 special, 9mm, and others are designed to take up and to absorb the 223, 5.56, and I'm not sure about a 303. Anyway, whatever. What do you think about bulletproof vests? Worth the hassle? Body armor?
Yes. You know, if you can get them, it depends on what state you live in. It's like in my state, you had to be in law enforcement to purchase from the company. Okay.
Right.
So, but fortunately, when I bought mine, I was working as a for the correction system. So I was in law enforcement. So what I had to do is send in a copy of my ID along with the requisition.
Right.
So that they would.
So you're okay then. You. Body armor is a good thing, and you should get it if you can.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so your basic body armor, it does stop bullets. It also will stop knives, okay? It'll stop shrapnel also.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so a small piece of shrapnel can mess you up if it hits the right place.
I'm sure.
So it's good to have that protection. Now, for rifles, you actually need a trauma plate. A trauma plate is just a plate that goes in over your vital organs and stuff, and it is meant to stop a rifle bullet.
It's actually a metal plate.
I mean, sometimes those plates only stop one bullet, though, so a second bullet coming through might do some damage. So it depends. Mm-hmm. You know, the technology is always improving. They're actually making the armor lighter, and they're getting better so that it stops more stuff. But at the same time, it's like the AK-47 uses a steel shank inside the bullet, each bullet, the 7.62 times 49. And that very often can penetrate armor and stuff.
Hmm.
So, and if you get hit with like a 50 caliber, there's nothing that's going to protect you from the 50 caliber. So,
yeah. Go ahead and try and finish up on your...
No, it's all right. This thing about the city is going to take me several weeks to get through and stuff, because there's a lot of information. Fighting in the city is a lot more difficult than fighting in the countryside, and there's different considerations. So I want to be able to cover everything, and I'll take my time, and we'll get through it, okay?
Good.
So
the other thing is reloader for, let's just pick 9mm magazines. You start pushing things in one at a time with your thumb, and they have reloaders that are semi-friendly. You can push them and slide them, and they'll load and load and load and load real quickly compared to just doing it manually. So we might want to look into loaders as well at some point.
Well, listen, any device that you can get that makes anything you do easier is going to be to an advantage, obviously. So
good job.
I wouldn't shoot down any of those ideas. You know,
good.
It's like if it's better for you, then do it. I mean, there's a lot of issues that they keep putting out, like the USCCA just put out a video about what pistol should you use, what caliber, and they said, of course, you shouldn't use a 25, a 32, or a 380. Okay, and even when I was back in the police department in the 1980s, well, we didn't like the idea of the 38 caliber because it wasn't powerful enough. So they developed the Plus P to be a little bit more powered, and then people would go to the 357 Magnum, okay, which had a little bit more power. Mm-hmm. But let me just say this one thing, just putting in everybody's mind. If you have been spending years shooting a certain type of pistol, like say a 45 automatic, stick with it because you've got muscle memory for that. You're going to do a better, you're going to fight better with a pistol you know very well. If you've been spending 20 years shooting a 45 automatic and you decide, oh, well, I want to use one of these cool 9 millimeters or something, that's not a good idea. Stick with what you really know. If you already have one established, stick with what you know. Okay.
Very good. Excellent advice. All right, we'll continue this next time and look forward to it as well. Thank you, Mitch, as always. Great stuff.
You're welcome.
Real important.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Good night. Okay, Mitchell Henderson, and you can find all Mitch's programs on the left side of the homepage. Thank you for being here on this Monday. Be back with you in 21 hours. Think good thoughts, and we'll talk soon.